You're listening to Radio City Talk. It's full time. My name's Matt Jones, and we're talking to another brilliant artist today because George Ezra has got his fantastic second album out. It's called Staying at Tamara's, and it's the follow-up to his 2014 debut, Wanted on a Voyage. And I have to say, I've heard it, and I think it's absolutely brilliant. So let's speak to George now. Good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thanks. Great to have you on. And you must be absolutely thrilled with the reception that this has had so far.
Oh, mate, you can't put it into words. I think there's an element of when you're releasing music, you kind of hold your breath and hope for the best. And it's all out of your hands. You know, you can't control whether people are going to enjoy it or not. And so it's lovely to know that people are blaring it and enjoying it.
They certainly are. I mean, Shotgun and Paradise are the two singles that you've had off it so far, and certainly Shotgun is a proper great summer tune, isn't it?
Do you know what? There was conversations, because I was saying, I think Shotgun should be the first single, and everyone at the record label was going, but it's a summer song. And I was going, but, you know, it will still be around in summer. And they were like, no, we need to wait till the sun comes out, which I took for granted until we did it. And I was like, oh, clever guys.
It's one of those that you can definitely picture yourself driving around in like a soft top car, roof down, music up as loud as possible.
There you go.
When you were writing this album, obviously you'd had such huge success with the debut one. How hard was it thinking, or how were you thinking, how am I going to follow that up as such?
Do you know what? I didn't really feel like that. I think that the first album, and this isn't because I didn't think it was good, but it did a lot better than I thought it was going to do. I didn't think many people were going to hear it, bar my family. So this one kind of felt like my first one, you know, in the sense it was the first time I really knew what I was doing a bit more. And the truth is, you have to please yourself. You know, I'm the one that has to get up and sing them each night. So if I don't like the songs, there's something wrong there. Mm. So my priority was just making sure I was happy.
Well, let's talk about the 4 years that you've had since the debut came out.
Yeah, I will just say, I wish it hadn't taken quite so long.
Well, I think there are plenty of people would echo that. But what a whirlwind 4 years it has been for you, from kind of the debut album coming out to now, a huge global artist.
Yeah, it's it's bizarre. And I don't know when it happened, how it happened, but somehow it has happened. And it's... you know, the best thing is my personal life hasn't changed at all, and it's the same faces, same pubs, same, you know, all of that, which is great. And it's just, as a musician, I think it's just a privilege to be able to say that you're a musician in any capacity. You know, I think the truth is, of a lot of musicians, would be, as long as we can do it, we're happy. So to be able to do it at the level that I'm doing it is just, you know, the cherry on top. It's amazing.
And looking at some of the things that you've achieved over those 4 years as well, playing the Pyramid Stage at Glastonbury. I've been to Glastonbury myself, and just watching there, being there and watching an artist is a fantastic experience. Yeah. What's it like playing it?
Mate, I wish I could tell you. I can't remember. And that's not because I was drunk. It's because it was a blur. You know, I'll tell you this. When I played on the Pyramid Stage, we played to roughly 80,000 people. And I walked out onto that stage, and before I'd even opened my mouth, I could see my ex-girlfriend in the audience. How's that for luck? Of all the people to see, I was just like, what are you? Why have I just seen you straight away?
That's brilliant. All the faces and all the ones that you pick out, amazing. How did she react to it throughout the gig then?
She was loving it. She was up on somebody's shoulders singing along with every word, which was lovely. And I saw her afterwards. It was very sweet.
Absolutely, that's brilliant. Right, you're listening to Radio City Talk. Matt Jones here on Full Time, and we're speaking to the wonderful George Ezra. New album, Staying at Tamara's, is out now. Let's talk a little bit about the album, the influences behind it. How would you describe it compared to the first one?
I think that... For the first record, I took this train journey around Europe, and I kept a journal as I did it, and I was out for a month by myself, and a lot of the songs came from that little journal that I'd kept. And this one, I did a few trips. I went to Barcelona for a month, and that just sounds like a holiday. So instead, what I did, instead of getting a hotel, is I found a stranger on the internet that was renting out their spare room, and I agreed to go and live with this person, which my management weren't best pleased about. But it was just brilliant. And my host was Tamara. And, you know, her and her friends all worked Monday to Friday, so I'd still just spend my time to myself. But it was just brilliant. And I think there was a few other... I found a cabin in Norfolk without electricity, and I went and spent 10 days up there, which was beautiful. And, I think a lot of the songs focus on this idea of... I don't know, switching off from the modern world. I think we could all do it from time to time and just getting away from the madness around us. And I really took pleasure in writing those songs.
It's clear as well that obviously travel is something that's really important to you, and it can influence people in so many different ways. And for you, it's influenced you musically.
Absolutely. I think that I've got friends that can sit down and write a song in their bedroom, you know, one a day. And I'm rubbish at it. Some people, you know, do you remember when the Arctic Monkeys first came out and they could describe the mundane and make it sound like poetry, and it was brilliant. When I try and write lyrics about having a cup of tea, it sounds like I'm singing about having a cup of tea. It's rubbish.
Well, what you've come up with here is brilliant. And as I say, Shotgun, we've talked about that being such a huge success. At Paradise as well, the reaction to it, what's it like waiting for people to hear what you've created?
Yeah, there's the kind of... It's just that kind of half an hour before you press go, as it were, the half an hour before it's released, and you post on Facebook or Twitter or, you know, go and listen, you know, and you just, it feels like being a kid again. It's exciting and, yeah, it feels a bit like show and tell at school, you know. And this is what I've been working on.
Yeah, definitely. And you're going to be bringing it up north because you're going on tour, and you're coming to Liverpool on the 9th of November. You're playing Guild of Students. Sold out already.
It is, and it's the second show of the tour, so it'll be nice and fresh. And it's been a long time since we played in Liverpool, so that's going to be a real pleasure.
And you were telling me just before off-air that you know this area of the world a little bit.
A little bit, I do, yeah. So my auntie Sue and Tom... her son, my cousin, he grew up, and she lives on the Wirral in Irby. So I used to come and spend quite a lot of time up in Irby. I remember most vividly, I remember the pet shop on the high street that had a parrot. I remember once, I think it was the shop owner. I mean, I was very young, but he fell over and the parrot laughed in his face, which as a kid, I was like, how's he getting away with that? If I laughed, I'd be in trouble. Happy memories.
You and I are about the same age, and I'm a Heswell lad, so I'm going to take that as at some point we have probably crossed paths when you've been up north.
We probably played football at some point.
Absolutely.
You know, in fact, I remember when I was about 16, I went up to visit my auntie, and we got the ferry over to Liverpool, and I bought Arcade Fire's Neon Bible in the HMV up there. I remember that.
Not a bad album to be getting your hands on that one. Yeah. We'll have to get you back up into the tower when you do come to Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely.
You finish your tour as well, I think I'm right in saying, certainly in the UK at Wembley. What is that like for you playing a venue like Wembley?
I mean, if I'm honest, Matt, I wish I could tell you. I have no idea. I've not done anything like it before. So what I'll do is I'll give you a call afterwards and let you know how it goes. But I trust it's going to be a brilliant night. The band are fantastic. You know, we're sounding tighter than ever. And the key thing is that we have an amazing audience that they kind of, it's as if as soon as they walk into the venues we play, it's like they know they're getting in for a big sing-along, and it's a beautiful thing.
I don't know if you're a football fan at all, but if you are, is it kind of, can you compare maybe the anticipation of playing a gig at Wembley to maybe going to watch your team at Wembley?
Do you know what? I'll tell you the funny, so my dad grew up in Crewe, and he's a Man U fan, and I don't really follow football, but I got us tickets to go up to Old Trafford and watch a game, and this was about 18 months ago or so, and it was the Bournemouth game, and we got the whole, you know, this way, sir, and my dad couldn't believe it. We were up at a little buffet, and it was brilliant, and it was the game they evacuated.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember the bomb scare?
Absolutely.
So we had woken up at the crack of dawn, got on the train up from London, and it was just like, oh, mate. I mean, you know, I know it's bigger than our journey. It was brilliant that they got everyone out safe and sound and everyone was well, but it couldn't have been worse luck.
It certainly couldn't have. Right, George, it's been great to have you on. Just before we finish on Radio City Talk, I've got to ask you, you played a gig last year for Mind. Yes. And can you tell us a little bit about why you decided to do that?
Yeah, I am Mind of a charity that I supported personally and privately for years. Just, you know, I had a kind of an amount each month I'd give to them, and then I came off tour of the first record, and for the first time in my life I started to experience what I can now say was kind of mental health issues, and they come in all shapes and sizes. And I think firstly, just having the vocabulary to admit that that's what's going on, I think is a big thing. And I think, you know, and I should just say as well, this was a period of time which I'm now no longer in, and it was more, I think it was to do with when my experience was, when you're on tour, you're in your own bubble, you know, and you're going from town to town and you are very much in your own world. And then coming off, it felt like a funny world to be in 2016, this was. And it felt like a lot, there was a lot of angst in the world in general. And then I had no work either because we were off tour. My one role was to write songs and you can't turn that on or off. So I found that I really didn't feel like I was part of a team, which I think all of us need. You know, whatever our job is, our jobs are important and it's nice to feel like you're part of something. So that's what I was going through. And so I wrote this album that was about escape, and it's okay to switch off from time to time. And I'm happy. I'm very fortunate to say that I'm much better now, and that's brilliant. But it just became apparent to me how quickly it can creep up on you and how unprepared you can be. It's hard, as I said, to have the vocabulary even to even go, you know, if I always say, if I walked into your studio now with a broken arm, it would be in a cast and you'd know, you know, something was up. But I think people are very able to smile and to put a front on and to suppress things. And I think the fact I heard was that one in four of us will experience some form of, you know, will be affected by mental health issues. And the truth is, I think all of us will be, even if not directly, people we know and love. It's going on. I think it's a brilliant thing that people are starting to talk. And I think the main thing that I like to say is that there is absolutely no shame in it. I think that you might not think it, but I'm sure all of us have people that you could ring up and they'd be more than willing to hear you talk. And if you don't feel like you have somebody, you know, within your instant friend group or family, or you don't know how to approach that, a charity like Mind are just fantastic because you can ring them up and they're not going to judge you in any way, shape or form, and they're going to just hear you out, and then they are professionally, you know, equipped as to give you advice where it might be best to turn. So I think it's all good conversation.
It certainly is. And the work that they do is fantastic because it really can happen to anyone. Just finally, did you find that writing the new album helped you then?
It did. It really did. And I know that's a very, you know, I'm very fortunate that I even have that as an option. But I think that just admitting it to myself, you know, that something wasn't right was the one step. And as I said, just feeling like you're a part of something and that you're that really has helped me a lot. It's nice to feel like you have a purpose.
It really is. It's great to hear that you are doing such good work and that you've helped, I'm sure, other people along the way as well. So thank you so much for your time, George. And we look forward to seeing you up here in Liverpool in November.
Amazing. Thank you very much, Matt. I appreciate it a lot.